It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Kids used to grow up playing outside, but today they're increasingly indoors and in front of screens. We'll hear a youth report this morning that explores the issue.
And I get a lot of likes. I get so happy about myself. But within a day or two, I mean, it's temporary.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. For many teenagers, nothing is more captivating than the steady stream of notifications on their phones. Almost 95% of American teens own a smartphone, and 45% say they spend most of their time online. As part of an Appalachia Health News Youth Reporting Project, Fayette Institute of Technology High School seniors Chloe Perdue and Keisha Moore examine how social media can affect teens' interactions.
At Midland Trail High School in Fayette County, most kids belong to some kind of clique, a breakfast club type dynamic. But what is the one thing almost all of the students have in common? A social media account.
Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, anything to distract myself from talking to other people.
That's senior Hunter Jones. Social media has been around for years, and it has captivated and influenced millions of people globally. But is that influence good?
A 2014 study published in the Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin found that social media might be helping American teens feel less lonely, but some teens say they feel pressured to get likes on their posts or are drawn to pick up their phone every second.
I'm on it unless I'm sleeping or unless I'm doing some kind of work or eating, and sometimes I'm on it when I'm eating as well. So like 23, 22 hours a day. Maybe 20.
Lily McMillian is a senior at Midland Trail High School. A 2016 study from the Pew Research Center found that half of teenage girls are near constant online users, compared with 39% of teenage boys. Senior Hunter Jones again.
Every day, almost every 5 minutes probably. I usually do it when I'm put in awkward scenarios in public. I'll just check my phone to avoid talking to people.
Hamlet Smith is a psychotherapist in Beckley, West Virginia.
You know, I think it more subtly it influences us. And, you know, just gossiping about somebody, and the ability to injure people emotionally, technology just improves that.
Hamlet says that since social media is such an easy source of communication, people can take advantage of others in negative ways.
59% of American teens reported some form of cyberbullying or online harassment in 2018. But students interviewed for this story say for them, the comparison game is the biggest issue. Senior Erin Crozier says that scrolling through social media can make her anxious, like everyone's living a better life.
I see them doing all this stuff and having so much fun, and sometimes, you know, I'm more of an introvert. And I sit in my house, I'm like, man, I don't have that. It's pretty depressing. And it makes me anxious that I'm not living that too, I think.
On the flip side,
when I get tons of likes, I feel great about myself. When I don't, I sort of use that as a way for acceptance almost, you know. And I feel like a lot of people do that. When they get a lot of likes, they're very happy about themselves. And they're very, you know, feel great about themselves. And I get a lot of likes, I get so happy about myself. But within a day or two, I mean, it's temporary.
A 2012 study from Harvard University suggests that when you share information about yourself through mediums like social media, your dopamine levels rise. Other research suggests that getting likes on social media gives a boost of dopamine. Lillian McMillian again.
If I don't get over 100 likes on something, or at least 150, then I delete it. The most I've gotten was like 400, so I try to keep it like up there, 200, 300 likes. Mm-hmm. But if it doesn't, then I delete it because I don't think I look good enough.
But when used well, social media can build community.
So if you are in a closed group with a group of people who really are intent on supporting each other, it can be a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a mixed bag. And I think it's primarily what your intentions are. But the problem with social media is not just what your intentions are, it's what the intentions of your network in social media too.
Studies from the Pew Research Center says that nearly two-thirds of teenagers reported that they make new friends through social media. And 90% use social media to connect with existing offline friends every day.
Although experts caution limiting how much time teens are spending on social media, and instead encourage people to socialize in person, the draw to and obsession with social media doesn't look like it's going to go away anytime soon.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Keisha Moore.
And I'm Chloe Perdue.
High school seniors Chloe Perdue and Keisha Moore were part of a youth reporting project with Appalachia Health News's Carol Lofton. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. Around the holidays, homemade treats are everywhere, whether it be Christmas cookies, gingerbread houses, or fruitcakes. But one Swiss holiday tradition involves making rosettes, light, crispy, deep-fried pastries made using floral-shaped iron molds. Our Folklife reporter, Caitlin Tan, visited Mike Costello, head chef at Lost Creek Farms. He recently inherited a rosette iron from his Helvetia ancestors. Here's Caitlin's story.
I'm standing in Mike Costello's farmhouse kitchen in Harrison County, West Virginia. It's wide open, long windows, natural lighting, a long island counter. Cast iron skillets hang from the ceiling, spices line the walls, a wood stove sits in the corner. It's the heart of his late 1800s farmhouse. It's a cold winter afternoon, and Mike is showing me how to make rosettes.
I've heard a lot of people refer to it as sort of like a lighter version of a funnel cake or so, like a little bit crispier, lighter. I mean, these rosettes, they're pretty delicate. When you pull them out of the oil, they look like they might be more robust, but that's because the fins of the iron they're kind of hollow. So you have the thing that looks like bigger and more dense than it is, but since those are all hollow, it's like this really kind of delicate pastry.
The rosette iron itself is similar to a branding iron, although much more delicate. The base is metal, floral-shaped. It's the part that is actually dipped into the batter and oil. The handle sticks vertically out of the cookie-cutter-like mold. Mike says the rosette can be traced back to many different immigrant cultures.
You know, I think rosettes were pretty common, especially in, you know, in this part of Appalachia, because you had so many immigrants coming, not just from Switzerland, but from, you know, Germany or Austria, Hungary, other places where, you know, you see this rosette tradition show up, especially around the holidays.
Mike's rosette iron was gifted to him last Christmas. It's likely it was passed down from his Swiss great-grandmother, Flora. She immigrated to Helvetia when she was six.
I got really excited, probably more excited than I should have been about just like this little, you know, metal floral shaped thing with a red handle, right? But to me it was much more than just like the tool. It was sort of that piece of my past that I'd been longing for. Like, I knew that there was this, you know, piece of my family's history that was up in the mountains around Helvetia, and we just kind of all of a sudden had something tangible to trace it back to.
Mike shows me photos of Flora. She's somewhat of a mystery woman to him. She passed away before her history could be fully documented. But what he does know is Flora was an excellent farmer and cook.
To have this piece of our heritage that if there was someone you could point to and be like, who's doing the farm to table the real deal way? You know, it was like, this is it right here. You know, this is...
She's literally standing with her cows and her chickens.
Yeah, standing with her cows and her chickens, standing with her amazing, prolific crop of pole beans that I see here in her kitchen apron.
Flora was doing farm to table before it was cool.
Before it was cool, Flora was doing farm to table in Braxton County, West Virginia. That's right.
So using the rosette iron passed down to him, Mike shows me how to make the pastries. He's using a traditional recipe from Helvetia. He starts with the batter by cracking 3 eggs. And he pours in half a pint of cream. The recipe calls for medium cream, so he's using half and half.
Yeah, we want to get the eggs and the cream pretty well beaten together. And then I'm going to add a little bit of flour. I'm going to add about 1 cup of flour to this. So I'm going to mix this up. And what we're looking for is actually for the batter to be pretty light. And this is a little bit maybe heavier than I want it to be. So I'm going to add a little bit more of that cream.
The mixture should be smooth and light, more like a pancake batter than a cake batter. After mixing, Mike always adds one secret ingredient.
You know, you need to put a little bit of bourbon, just a little splash of bourbon into your batter. And I honestly don't know if I've noticed much of a difference when I've put it in there, but it's kind of fun to carry on the...
Maybe for good luck.
Yeah, for good luck. You know, I've heard some folks say it makes it a little bit crispier, and I'll take it.
He then heats up lard in a skillet. It's about 3/4 inch deep. Mike says you want the oil about the depth of the flour base on the iron.
That's our cat, Frida. She loves rosettes. So I'm going to try one out here. I've got my iron in this hot lard, and I'm just going to dip it in this batter. You can hear it. That's it, adhering to the... to the iron. Again, I'm trying to avoid it coming up over the top of the iron so that when I put it in, it slides right off.
That's the sound of the batter-covered iron being dipped into the hot lard.
It's almost like a blossoming flower.
It is, yeah, very much so. And that one's getting brown enough that you probably go ahead and take it out. It doesn't take much time. Yeah, I know. They're so soft and so delicate that they fry up really quickly.
The end result is a golden, crisp, airy pastry in the shape of a flower. It has 8 petals that are hollow, which add to the delicate intricacy of the finished pastry.
You know when you get it right, because you can hear the sizzle of the batter just like that. Yeah, that's when you know it's like really sticking to it pretty well.
And then all the oil kind of bubbles up over it.
While we fry the batter, Mike is reminded of making Christmas cookies as a kid with his grandmother, Betty Williams.
She had a little kind of step stool, like a 2 or 3 tier step stool that my brother and I would get on because we couldn't reach the countertop, but... that's a lot of what I think back to in terms of the holidays and tradition is, you know, being in that kitchen and making those cookies and wanting to kind of keep that up in some way. So now that she's gone as well, it's kind of like, in a way, sort of satisfies that desire for me to be a little kid again and spend time in my grandma's kitchen making these Christmas cookies because it's like almost the same.
In a matter of minutes, I notice a plate towering with rosettes.
I'd like to point out that we have, what would you say, 2 dozen?
Oh God, we have so many rosettes right now. we've run out of room on the plate, and we still have a ton of batter left.
While they're still hot, Mike adds some sweet toppings.
First, I'm just going to put like a basic powdered sugar on. I'm going to do a little cinnamon and sugar mix. And then I'll have some with some sorghum. And then, you know, one of the things that goes pretty well with that sorghum is so sweet, but I use a little bit of this Jagu Dickinson salt from the Charleston area.
Mike grew the sorghum on his farm for the syrup he's using. It adds an unexpected earthy flavor. And then the salt marries all the flavors together. But the best part of the process is pouring a cup of coffee and eating a crispy, delicate, sweetness that melts in your mouth rosette on a cold winter afternoon. For West Virginia Morning, I'm Caitlin Tan in Lost Creek, West Virginia.
You can find the original Helvetian recipe and pictures of Mike Costello's rosette iron on our website at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.